Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Bill Burr and Burt Kreischer. Is that how we do it? It's time for another wonderful episode of the Bill
Burt
Podcast. All right, what's going on, Burt? Great to see you.
I just had a bowl of cereal at night. Is there anything better? Isla said, I'm going to talk about this on the podcast. And Isla goes, Dad, Bill's an egg sandwich kind of guy. He's not a bowl of cereal kind of guy.
I'll be telling you this, dude. I'm trying to think of anything that I don't like for breakfast. I love breakfast. I go everything from a healthy smoothie with the powdered protein all the way to I'll just eat salmon cold from last night's dinner out of the fridge in a cold tortilla. I don't give a shit. Oh. I got up. I haven't eaten in 8 hours. Everything looks good to me. I don't have that morning thing of like, oh God, I can't eat that in the morning. I could sit down and eat like, I don't know, if you pick something, I could eat it. I could eat a goulash for breakfast, cold.
I remember the first time I had a breakfast burrito and I was like, shut the fuck up. I was like, they do this for breakfast too? Oh my God. Dog.
Breakfast burrito. Yeah, that thing puts you on the mat though. That's the only thing I don't like. I don't like shit that's going to take me down. You know what I mean? Where like, now my day's fucked. So I try to stay away from waffles, French toast, and pancakes because that thing's taking you down to the map. You know, that's like you're just choking yourself out. You're just taking yourself down.
We went to breakfast. Me, you, and Al went to breakfast one time at a place called 4 and 20. It's right. It's closed now. If COVID got it. But one of my favorite things was their pancakes, to get their pancakes. And then I do pancakes very specifically. I butter the pancakes first. I never just get pancakes. I'm not that kind of guy.
Thought you were. I would never say that about you.
Eggs over easy. I usually add eggs. 3 eggs over easy. Bacon, hash browns. Murder that. And then what I do is I butter the pancakes. Then I cut a pie sliver out of the pancake, right? And I pour syrup into the center of that pie sliver and let it load up in that one little sliver so that it's almost candied bread. And I'm getting hungry again. And I just had a bowl of cereal.
Yeah, no, there's a whole art to putting syrup on pancakes. Cause if you don't know how to do it, you'll go through a whole bottle and you still won't even taste it.
Yeah. Right.
Pancakes are like a gold digging whore. They're just absorbing all the assets here. So what you got to do is you got to put the syrup to the side. You bring the pancake into the syrup. Don't put the syrup into the pancakes. It'll disappear.
It just goes and do you know this? Well, this is one of those things that you see for the first time. And then you can't unsee in a weird way is syrup's more expensive than gasoline.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. And they also, like, they monitor how much they put out. It's a whole scam. Diamonds, syrup, oil, the whole thing. Those Beanie Babies back in the day.
Yeah.
All of that shit. Football cards. The whole thing is...
You know, they did that with free agency in Major League Baseball.
What's that?
So I'm on like a huge history kick right now. And so I watched Ken Burns's baseball on my treadmill. And they said when free agency started off, I'm certain there's someone that's really into baseball that's going to go, that's not at all what happened. But
okay.
When free agency kicked off, they were like, well, we can't just make everyone free agents or it'll be a free for all. We've got to space it out. So it's a trickle effect. So you just release a few free agents at a time. So then there's money there to be spent because it was just everywhere. But then all the owners colluded and said, don't pay them. No one pick up a free agent. Because before free agency, it was just like slave days. Like
it was a studio system.
Yeah, you were on a team and then they could keep you forever. It fucking amazing.
Yeah, like if you were in the system, like they were saying, like if you were a great center field prospect during, you know, Joe D into Mickey Mantle, you actually could have made the pros if you just asked for a trade or got out of that system, but you just never got brought up.
Yeah. There was really fascinating how, like, I was watching this thing about Ty Cobb, and it's amazing that they, you know, with what cancel culture is, that they allow a guy like that to remain in the Hall of Fame, but they cancel, you know, like Andrew Jackson or whatever. Like, they're canceling old presidents. But when you look at Ty Cobb, outright racist, like outright bigot, who walked around with a Luger in his pocket everywhere and $1 million worth of bonds and just got drunk every fucking day. Whiskey and milk, I think he had. And
well,
just,
he might have an out then, because that was the out that a lot of modern day racists were using, where they were like, well, I was drunk, I need to go to rehab. He was a victim. There was no rehab. If he went to rehab, he could have got sober and he wouldn't have been racist anymore. He could have gone that route. I am. It's so ridiculous to go back in time and try to compare now to then. And then, of course, you're living now. Like, you don't think somebody in 100 years can look back at 2020 and some of the shit that we're doing and saying, and you're not going to be, that you're going to be in the fucking wrong. Dude, just look at 10 years ago, the shit that you could say versus now. That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to go back 100 years. Yeah. And then you're going to look at this guy and act like everybody else around him was woke.
Right. You look at everyone.
They just didn't hit 4,000 baseballs, so you don't know who they are.
Well, Ty Cobb was very progressive with transgendered rights, oddly enough.
I heard about that.
He was using pronouns, proper pronouns, so much quicker than anyone else.
Dude, there was so much dislike. You can't, it's like comparing eras.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, tonight I was watching, you know, the pregame for the Patriots-Rams, right?
Yeah.
And I was sitting there with my mother-in-law, and she saw Tony Gonzalez, and she goes, was he a football player? He looks really big. He doesn't look like a broadcast. Yeah, I said, yeah, he's arguably, statistically, the greatest tight end of all time. And I'm thinking in my head, was he came around during the right time where it was such an offensively minded, I'm not taking away from the guy, but like, it was just like, for the longest time, the tight end was a glorified offensive lineman.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a blocking end, essentially. And then that position evolved through, you know, the Raymond Berries, the Dave Caspers, all of those guys on the way up to open the door, you know. And then they figured out that offense sells the game, catches the casual fan. So, like, the statistics, if you know what's crazy? To look up the all-time passing leaders in football right now, if you look at the top 20, like, it's like 17, 18 are still playing right now. Something crazy like that. Or, yeah. I'm sorry, all played within, like, the last, like, 20 years, since, like, 1990, 30 years, I should say. Like, all of a sudden, all of these guys got, like, just blown by. Like, when I was a kid, it was Fran Tarkington had the most yards all time, and he had, like, 47,000 yards or 48,000 yards. And there's, like, guys who are considered mediocre. He had a decent career. He wasn't, like, you know, he wasn't one of the greats. He's not making the Hall of Fame. And they'll throw 40, 45,000 yards.
Yeah.
And then if you look the other way, the running stuff, the all-time rushers and all of that stuff, they just run way less. So, I mean, to try to get, like, 10,000 yards has become a really difficult thing. Certainly for the average back.
I look at that. I'm writing down ideas. I look at that in comedy too. You look at, I think you said this actually. You know, you go back 20 years ago, the amount of guys playing theaters was like 20, maybe 10.
I can't even. Carlin, Cosby, like legends.
Yeah, legends were playing theaters.
Would play, but even then, a lot of them. A lot of the other bigger guys would just, they'd sit in Vegas, do like corporate gigs and stuff like that. Like, you had to be like really, really big. Dude, I remember like when Politically Incorrect, Bill Maher's first show was on the air in the late, was it early 90s, mid 90s when that show first came on. It was a big deal that he came to the Comedy Connection in Boston and went clean for the weekend, sold out 6 shows.
Yeah.
But, you know, if now he's doing real time. He's a theater act, but it's, I don't know what it was. I don't know what made that leap, because I don't think the comedy boom ever got bigger than the 80s until recently.
You think, but it was Netflix?
Oh, you know what it is? Yeah, it's Netflix, and it's, well, you also can do this shit. Can you imagine if back in the day you could have just watched Carlin and Pryor shooting the shit on a podcast? Like, how big would they have been?
Oh, my God. How great. Like, I mean, it sucks that I know it's just me and you. How great would it have been to listen to Pryor and Carlin on a podcast?
A lot better than this.
A lot. So, but if they had to do it every week, I bet there would be some weeks it would fall off.
Yeah, it would be. Somebody would. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But that's why I'm not a big, like, as far as, like, the little history of football that I know, you know, it's Paul Brown and Otto Graham and Lou Groza was what brought the NFL into sort of the pre-modern era of modern era, where, I mean, if you read up on those guys, like, that's who Bill Belichick is. Bill Belichick is the next Paul Brown. I feel like he changed it the way Paul Brown did. And, I mean, up until then, they didn't even know that, like, kicking – like, your kicker was an offensive lineman, which is what they had, Lou the Toe Groza, and they just – they didn't take it seriously, and Lou took it seriously, and Paul Brown took it seriously. And then all of a sudden, they just started winning all these games. And they came in from that other league, and they thought it was inferior, and they were winning all these games. And so they finally broke it down in a piece on paper. Like, why? What are these guys doing? And it was like they were kicking field goals. And he was accurate, like, from 45 yards out, straight-on kicker, offensive lineman. So they were just getting three here and three there, and these other guys were just either punting the ball away or going for it. Which, by the way, dude, the fucking analytics people, what they have done to football. I watched a game the other day at 0-0 in the first quarter, or maybe the beginning of the second quarter, and they go for it on fourth and goal. That game against the Bills. And yeah, they don't get it. It's just like, what the fuck are you kick a field goal? I don't understand. Like, they play the whole game like it's the end of the game. And it's just, I guess, this analytic where you go for the most points. It's almost like what happened in the NBA with, like, the three-pointer. And it's, I think it's like, does it work, or does it work because everybody else is doing it?
I don't know. I don't follow enough basketball. I love analytics, though. I watched a show today where they were talking about a crash, an airplane crash in England. And they were like, a lot of people survived, and they were all in one area of the plane. So they're like, we had to recreate it and find out where the deaths were. And they had a plane, like a plane, and they put where all the deaths were, and then all the people. And it was like,
I think you said where all the desks were. I'm like, you know, how big was this fucking bed, an office?
It's deaths. And okay, what they were saying was, and it was like, so I would love to be a part of one of these, like, fact-finding missions to, like, get to the bottom of why people died. They were like, the chairs were supposed to withstand 16 Gs, right? And they're like, why were there so many deaths? If the chairs could withstand 16 Gs, the chairs, and then in my brain, I'm sitting watching this going, yeah, but they're just screwed to the floor. How strong is the floor? And then they go, the floor gave out. So the second the thing hit the ground, everyone stayed in their chairs, but they went gush into the plane and then all died. And I was like, and then the only people that lived were the people in the back of the plane, because they didn't hit hard, so they remained intact to the floor. Fucking shit like that, amazing. I would love to have a job like that, to figure out mysteries of why things happened.
Yeah, I don't know. If your chair can survive 16 Gs, I think the chair survives.
I don't think you
the
stay in it.
The human being does not. Like, your brain then slams off the front of your skull at 16 Gs. Is that even a thing? I don't know what the fuck that would be.
Yeah.
I think they kind of slam towards the front of the plane. Is what the plane hits something. Unless you just fell out of the sky and pancaked. If you slam it, I think it all just goes like an accordion.
Yeah, it was that kind of stuff. I mean, I feel like we should get
one of those guys on. There's guys, insurance guys, where that's their job, where they know the probability, and just to see if does it affect the way they live their lives, and like what's safer versus, you know, because everybody throws it out there, you know, this is safer. The most dangerous thing you do is drive down the highway. I say that all the time. No numbers. No numbers behind that statement. I just want
to be see where they sit in an Uber.
Right.
Like you get
well, they probably say you want to sit on the driver's side.
That's what I would think.
Because if someone was coming at them, they're going to swerve away from it.
Yeah.
They say that's where you should put your baby.
Oh, really?
Now, we'll put it on your side because just your instincts, something's coming at you. You're not going to turn towards you. You're going to try to be further away from it.
I love little shit like that. Like, you know, what you'll find, this is crazy, but where you have your kids in the car right now is where they'll sit for the rest of their lives.
Is that right?
Yeah, like
you. I love the sound in your voice there, because I heard what a great dad you are. Where they sit right now is where they'll sit for the rest of their lives. They just had this sweet Christmassy.
I said, I would.
That's a great dude. You're a great dad. I can tell.
I would argue every parent out there right now goes, wait, let me think about that. Your oldest sits behind the driver's seat, and your youngest sits to the next, because that's how you set it up. Normally, your first baby is going to sit over there so you can look at it when you're driving. And then once you have a second one, the oldest goes behind you and the youngest goes to the right. I would argue everyone's family, that's how they sit. Is that how you sit?
Now they're doing it, though. Now they tell you to put the second one in the middle.
Ooh.
Because it's safer in the middle. So my kids, my daughter sits behind me, and then my son sits right in the middle.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
We didn't have that. We had Louis C.K. had the greatest joke as a parent.
Yeah.
Like, that was like the fucking perfect joke. He goes, you know, a lot of people, I'm going to fuck it up. He goes, a lot of people talk about disappearing when they're a parent, going out and getting away and taking some time off for yourself. You know what my vacation is? You know, the second when you buckle in your youngest kid and you shut the door and you walk from the rear passenger side all the way to the driver's side, that's my vacation. And
yeah.
I've been there so much where you're like, okay, everyone's in the car. I got a second for myself and we're back in the car.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. It's,
yeah.
that joke, I would say, transcends even being a parent. It's just such an amazing, because when he did that joke.
You remember that joke?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't have any kids. And I understood way more what it was like to have. Like, it was vivid. I remember Seinfeld brought that joke up. Like, people love that. Was like, that's a high watermark joke.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where that is on the all-time list, all-time passers, all-time rushers, all-time jokes. That's, for me, that's way up there.
That's funny. I thought I was the only one that heard it. You know, like, I thought that was just meant for me in a weird way. I didn't realize other people got it the way I got it.
Dude, I'm going to go back to therapy.
Hey, I'm back in therapy.
I'm going to go back. I got some got shit I got to work out. I got to get it out of me so it's not affecting people around me.
Oh, unlike me, who's affecting everyone right now. I am.
Oh, no, I am affecting people, which is why I have to. Like, I gotta fix some shit.
My therapist gave me good advice. I misunderstood it, told it to my wife. She then recorrected the advice. I then understood it, and it's been working great.
Isn't that amazing?
He goes, you need to, what he was saying was you need to separate yourself. You're what's happening is you're getting upset, and the your reaction is toxic. The way you're reacting to it is unhealthy, and it's not good for other people. You need to separate yourself.
I never see that side of you.
Oh.
You're like one of the most fun guys. I was saying on Rogan, you're so much fun. Like, I feel like you get you pay attention to make sure everybody's having fun. I feel like you're that guy. And if you see somebody, you're I mean, it's a bad example. Remember Belushi in Animal House when that dude was crying because they wrecked his car and he took the bottle? He smashed a bottle on his head. I feel like you got that thing where, like, it's amazing. I don't know. But different hanging out versus living with somebody is completely different.
My stuff, oddly enough, is kind of about that shit. it's stuff going on in my family where I feel like people are not, I want everyone to hang out in the living room and be a team. And I don't want anyone to grow up. I don't want anyone to grow up. I want us to be the same little group that we've always been. And people are growing up and people are making decisions without consulting me. And I get really upset. Regardless, the therapist told me I need to separate from those situations because I'm taking it personally and I'm being toxic. Just separate. I misinterpreted it, and I was like, my therapist thinks I need to take a vacation from this family. And my wife's like, what? And I was like, you guys are toxic. You're killing me. And then she was like, oh, I see what's going on. You're toxic. You need to go to the bedroom right now and just go. And I dealt with it really good. I said, hey, I'm really proud of you. I understand what you did. I get that. And we're not done talking about this, but I can't talk about this right now because I love you too much to be a bad person right now. And then everyone was like, wow, this is very mature for you. And I went into the bedroom and I went to sleep and I woke up the next day and was in a better mood. And I said, hey, I said, we're going to talk about this later today. I still haven't talked about it, but I don't know.
Hear what Joe Bartnick says? Joe Bartnick says, women who marry comedians are saints. Any woman that marries a comic is a saint.
Oh.
No, dude, you know what I learned? I was watching, I went down some, I was just on YouTube, right? I've been watching all these French films. And I watched the original La Femme Nikita, which was great. The French one is great. It gets a little, her training, it got a little hokey. And I'm like, well, the French sense of humor is a little, plus the movie's almost 30 years old. But then just the way it goes from there was amazing. But I in that column was somehow it was somebody analyzing Joe Rogan's show, which I love when people come up with these videos and they analyze a friend of mine, because that most times it's not right. But whether their analyzation of him was correct or not, I actually got something out of it, where it was like Joe was talking to somebody and they kept interrupting. And they were going, look how Joe breathes here. He breathes, he's breathing from his mouth and da-da-da-da. I know it's like one of those things where they just created this whole backstory and it was probably whatever, but they used his show to talk about breathing to maintain your not losing your shit. So now that I've said this out loud, they probably just attached it to the Joe Rogan show because it's so fucking huge and they wanted to get hits.
Yeah.
But my wife said something and I went, and I started elevating my voice. And I just brought it down and I just put my head back and started breathing slowly as she was going like, well, what? Blah, 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 thinking that I was getting ready to blow up. And I actually went the other way. Like she thought it was like this nuclear thing, I was going to go nuclear. Yeah. And I brought it all the way down. And I went, all right, it's fine. We can just do something else. And then she was looking at me like that was it. And I was like, did you see what I just did there? Because, of course, I'm the comedian. I need the pat on the back. I got to get the laugh or the acknowledgement. I was like, I just started breathing. So I did that today with had a couple of issues that came up. And I just sort of breathed my way through it. It worked out. Things fucking bother me.
They shouldn't.
Well, there was people on my street. They took out these two giant, they were redoing the sidewalk and they took out these two giant old trees. And it's like, can you do that?
Oh, that would drive me fucking nuts. You're not allowed to do
that.
Yeah,
and it's just like, so what? So what? Somebody can rollerblade down the fucking street? Like, when did the trees win, Bert? Huh? That's what I started thinking. Like, why are we always the fucking priority? And they were these great trees, and it's this awesome tree-lined street, and now, like, there's this giant alopecia tree hole in the middle of the fucking street.
Oh,
but here's the thing, crazy. Dude. I can't rat people out. I can't rat people out. First of all, I don't know why they took it out. They could have been dead. I don't know.
Yeah.
They didn't. But as far as my assessment and no knowledge of trees, I looked at the stump. And then I'm like, oh, you're just going to leave the stump there?
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff.
Oh, okay. Let's talk trees
then. That gets me going.
So I don't think there's any secret, but we bought a new house, and we've been trying to fix it up over the quarantine, but it's been touch and go with restrictions and whatnot. But one of the things we could do was very early plant some privacy hedges, right? So I was pretty specific about what I wanted. By the way, this is one of the things I was in therapy for. I was very specific about what we wanted. I said, I want ficus. Ficus grows big and tall, and they're perfect. And Leanne says, their roots are invasive. I go, not to me. I don't really care.
What does invasive mean?
It means they just roots go anywhere. I don't give a shit. I don't care. I see everywhere. They're great, and you can't see through them. They're great privacy hedges. She's like, they got these great cherry blossom privacy hedges. I think we're going to go with those. Their roots aren't invasive. And now I'm thinking, in my head, I go, I bet invasive root means bigger tree. I bet invasive root, that's like saying like, you know, he's got big hands. Well, then he's got a big dick. I need a big dick in this situation. So I'm like, we buy these fucking goddamn cherry trees, and we must have gotten the fucking most rescue cherry trees you could ever see. None of them are even at fence height. Half of them bend over because they grew too heavy, so they're just bent over. These are the bane of my existence. And the whole time, I'm just like, I knew what I wanted. I said what I wanted. And then I got convinced by you and another woman to get something else. And I told you, I want these. And both of them said, no, this is the problem with men. You don't want invasive roots. It's going to tear up your fence. I go, hey, I won't need the fence once these trees are fucking Kareem Abdul-Jabbar high.
I feel your pain. This like, don't you hate as a married guy when the decision's already made and they still come and ask you? That's one of the things where it's just like, I literally now, so many things my wife asked me, I just laugh going like, I know you've already made up your mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just like, it's a wrap. Like, that's the thing. That's my, you know, I have a lot of issues with this whole narrative, as they say, that guys are just like, the married women are just these kept women and blah, blah, blah. And I just want to be like, where? I mean, like, it just seems like the only way to have your woman like that is you got to be like abusive.
Yeah.
Like those wife beater guys, like they're staring at the ground, afraid to do anything. Like, I mean, if that's the way you want to fucking, I mean, who'd want to do that to somebody? But like everybody else, this is going to sound like a mad. If you don't slap the shit out of your wife, you ain't going to have her in line. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, if you try to do what they tell you to do, oh, wow. Can you imagine if this whole fucking thing, this whole woman's move was really just about to eliminate the physical superiority as far as strength, generally speaking, of a man towards a woman, and then shift the game to a cerebral thing, their strength. The way Jim Irsay sat on the competition committee and made the Patriots defense illegal, and then he stole our offense and won a fucking Super Bowl, right? Like, what if if that's the way that we're going? I like that, because then what happens is all you gotta do is learn how to play their games. And then you get better at it than they are. And then they let you in, and now you're reading their playbook. This is like a fucking movie, Bert.
This is a great idea. I love that every sports guy goes, I actually can understand that analogy. That's perfect.
Yeah.
They just flip it on us. So all
Jim Irsay helped make fucking rules. The guy who calls everybody else a cheat helped make fucking rules that was advantageous for the how his team was built. That was that classic one where we fucking shut him down and they bitched about to the refs and they said what they're doing is not illegal. Then they made a tape. Him and Peyton Manning were talking about it. They're like, it's not illegal. And then the next year it was illegal. And within 2 years of that, and Irsay sat on the competition committee. I'm not saying he was the only guy, but he was in there running his yap. And within 2 years of that, they beat us with our own offense and shit, which I got to tell you is fine. I don't have a problem with any of that. Well, the problem I have is to then double back and be like, oh, they took some air out of a ball. It's just like,
yeah,
you fucking changed the rules, buddy. Good on you, but quit your fucking crying.
Yeah, that
is. I bring this up fucking 15 years after it happened.
The only thing that is more upsetting about customer service, there's nothing worse than bad customer service. And especially when they don't give a shit, when they don't give a shit that you're upset, that is such a helpless feeling.
It's infuriating.
There's nothing more powerful than someone not giving a shit. Am I right, Bill?
Absolutely. I always get so mad. It's like, if you don't like the job, quit it. Don't take it out on me.
Banks, buying stuff online, just going to the airport. Customers need to feel taken care of. That's why Zendesk's award-winning support sales and customer engagement software helps businesses offer personal services at scale so your team can create conversational experiences that keep customers happy. Zendesk gives businesses everything they need to stay connected with their customers, with seamless channels across email, phone, chat, messenger, community forum, help center, or even social media. Zendesk calls that conversational experience, connected, ongoing, and natural customer interactions, all made possible with Zendesk's complete customer profile and a unified set of tools that give you the context you need to deliver great service in every conversation.
Yeah, because that's pretty much gone away with the internet. It's like hostile how much they won't even answer the phone. So thank God for these guys.
Yeah, and what's crazy is most support software requires extensive consults and months of setup. But with Zendesk, it takes just hours to get up and running on top of being quick to implement. Zendesk software easily scales to meet changing needs. Zendesk gives organizations the flexibility to move quickly, focus on initiative, and adapt to growth. And with over 150,000 paid customer accounts and over a decade of experience, they've gotten pretty good at customer service themselves. See for yourself why the best customer experiences are built with Zendesk. Get started at Zendesk.com/Bill Burt. That's Zendesk.com/Bill Burt.
All right. Oh, I love reading this one because I love a nice cigar. Thompson's Cigar Company. Ooh. I love having a cigar. Burt, God damn it, I'm having one tonight. What about you? You got one right there?
Oh, Bill. Bill, I'm going to treat
my man. I love a cigar. It helps me disconnect from the craziness of the world. It does. I have a room in my house dedicated to smoking cigars. It's my back porch. Whether you're working from home or just kicking back after a week of being essential, there's no better way to relax than with the premium cigar. That's 100%. It was one of the most truest statements you're ever going to hear. And Thompson Cigar Company has the deals and selections to keep you occupied for hours on end. With over a century in the business, these guys really know their stuff. They got the best prices on the biggest brands in the business, from Macanudo to Monte Cristo. They have the largest selections of samplers online. I love a sampler, Bert. I don't know about you.
I love sampler cigars because sometimes I don't know what I want, and I'm not a man enough to go out and just buy an array of cigars.
Yeah, you end up discovering something that you didn't know existed, and all of a sudden you got a new favorite cigar. And you have the option to build your own every day in the Thompson's 5-Pack Fever program, including over 300 different 5-pack options to mix and match. This is a great stocking stuffer for your man, too. Looking to try new rare top-rated blends but don't want to splurge on boxes? Check out Thompson Cigar Tour, a smattering of 5 different blends delivered to your doorstep each month. They also send out insane cigar deals via email daily with personalized I might smoke a cigar by the end of this copy. This is so good. With personalized email preference options so you can sign up to receive them all. Or just the days you feel like reading emails. That was a joke and I ruined it. Sorry, Thompson Cigar Company. Personally, cigars helped me. I had one cigar in the samplers they sent me with
the Gloria Cubana we had.
Yeah, you know what I love, dude? I love the nubs.
Oh, yeah.
I love with the Connecticut wrap. Forget about it. Their customer service is the best. So sit back. Cigar people are the best. So sit back, take a break from the craziness, with a cigar from Thompson Cigar Company. You got a quarantine now? One of the best things you can do during a pandemic, kick back and smoke a cigar. These guys, hey, Winston Churchill did it. These guys rarely do offers.
Kind of morning.
That's right. These guys rarely do offers, but now Thompson's is offering our listeners 15% off over $75 or 20% off over orders of $99. To take advantage of these incredible savings, simply go to thompsoncigar.com and use the promo code Bill Burt when you're ready to check out. That website is Thompson, T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N, cigar.com, and use the promo code Bill Burt, B-E-R-T.
Hold on, I gotta let this fucking dog in.
All right, I'll plow. You want me to plow through the next one?
I got it. I'm back.
You got it. You got it.
Listen up, fellas. 2020 sucked. It's New Year's and new balls with our Manscaped sponsor. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming, offering precision and engineered tools for your family jewels and helping 2 million men all over the world get rid of the hair on their balls. If you let yourself go in 2020 while in quarantine, Manscaped is here for you to reboot and stay clean and shaved in 2021. I've been a big ball shaver since 1997 is when I first started. That's back in the frontier days, Bill.
You were ahead of the curve.
You had to take hair clippers down to your package. And
dangerous
boy,
game. Dangerous game.
You could carve up your balls nice and quick down there.
And you had no one to blame but yourself and the lack of technology available.
Not anymore. Manscaped is here to give you a fresh start in 2021 with the perfect package 3.0 that has the right tools for the job, unlike 1997. Come out of quarantine with clean balls thanks to the Lawnmower 3.0. This is waterproof, not what I had back then. And skin-safe trimmer to reduce nicks on your two best friends. Man, I remember cutting behind my balls so badly that I couldn't jog for a week. The third generation trimmer.
I remember doing it one time. I nicked my balls and I was going out with this chick I knew I was going to hook up with. And it was just like, that was the AIDS scare too. It's like, is it airborne? Is it going to float down to my taint?
It's also time to freshen up down there this year with the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You're already putting deodorant on your armpits. Why not put deodorant on the smelliest part of your bodies? And for the on-the-go freshness you'll need, you're going to love their Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. 2020 was so awful. Make sure your boys are refreshed and ready for new beginnings in 2021. Manscaped's even thrown in their Shed travel bag to keep all your goodies stored comfortably. Speaking of comfort, the Manscaped anti-chafing boxers are also included and hands down are the best underwear you will ever wear. A guy with hairy balls is like the year 2020. Don't be that guy. Get 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com/Bill Burt. Your balls will thank you. Get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com/Bill Burt. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com/Bill Burt. Happy New Year's to your balls.
Dude, that gave me a great idea for a show.
What's that?
You interview legends of pornography, and it's called Behind the Ball Bag. Because I was just thinking of that ball bag deodorant. Like, behind your balls has got to be the worst fucking dumpster fire ever. Sorry. Oh. All right. I know it's bad when I make Bert go, oh. All right, last one. Here we go. Helix, everybody. You know, not being able to sleep because of today's politics, your love life, any other drama. Sleeping on a terrible mattress before Helix on the road. Helix Sleep makes personalized mattress right here in America and ships straight to your door with free no-contact delivery, free returns, and a 100-night sleep trial. To choose a mattress, Helix made a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. If you like a mattress that's really soft or firm, if you sleep on your side or on your back or on your stomach, or you sleep really hot.
That's me. I sleep really hot.
What, you got a body under the house?
A lot of Helix, sweat.
There's a specific mattress for each and everybody's unique taste. I love Helix, but you don't need to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ, Wired Magazine, and my favorite name for any magazine ever, Apartment Therapy. Just go to helixsleep.com/BillBurt, take their 2-minute quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty. And you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up and give you a full refund if you don't love it. Gross. But you will. Right now. Dude, there'll be enough DNA on that thing to plant it at a murder site. Right now, Helix is offering up $200 off mattresses, off mattress orders for our listeners. Get up to $200 off at helixsleep.com/BillBurt. H-E-L-I-X, BillBurt, B-E-R-T.
Hey, I went and got a CT scan today, Bill.
Oh, you did?
I got my heart scanned. Have you ever got one of those?
No.
They check the amount of calcium in your heart to see if you're gonna have a heart attack.
No. How are you looking?
I go to our cardiologist on Tuesday. So he'll
I gotta tell you, Bert, there's a lot of people pulling for you. Because their excuse will be not because they even love you. That's a given.
Yeah.
But we want you to be okay, so we'll know that we're definitely okay. Even though we have completely different DNA, whatever, genetics. Because there are those people, because my buddy tries to show me this guy who lived, you know, he lived to be 100 and something, and one of his things was, what do you do? He goes, I have a cigar every day. And he goes, see, dude, it's not bad. It's like, well, somehow for him, it is like it's like there's a whole recipe going on there. What else is he doing? What's his genetics?
Yeah.
Is he one of those guys that just walks around like, because I know guys that just like to chew on them.
Oh, I have a bag of cigars right here that I haven't been drinking this month, and I've lost 16 pounds since the beginning of the month.
Dude, you know how much clearer your face is?
Can you see it?
Absolutely, dude, because a lot of times you'll come on here and you look like a yachtsman. You know, like you just, what's that big yacht race they have down there? America's Cup.
America's Cup.
Yeah. Remember that year we lost it and everybody was freaking out in Australia? And we were like, what happened? How many years did we win that? I didn't even know that was a thing. What are there, a bunch of rich people in Australia? Who roots for anybody on a fucking yacht? I always just see there's always like guys doing this shit with the fucking.
Yeah, I was watching, I'm not drinking, and I was watching The Darkest Hour. Have you seen that? It's about Winston Churchill.
Okay.
And this is what I planned.
I love Winston Churchill.
I might have need to get a big poster of him for my new podcast studio.
If I don't, I learned, you know, I learned about him, Iron Maiden.
Really?
Iron Maiden, right before Aces High. This speech used to give me chills. He's like, we'll fight on the land, we'll fight on the sea, we'll fight in the air, we will never surrender.
Yeah.
It's just like that fucking attitude. It used to get me amped the fuck up. And that used to amp me up to go to the gym. I can't imagine, you know, they're handling the blitzkrieg and he's just sitting there. I mean, that's a fucking leader.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what we have been missing. I don't think we corrected the problem, but is what, I mean, I don't want to see either one of those guys on the center. Neither one of them has the Joe Montana vibe, if you know what I mean. But Winston Churchill smoking a cigarette, and that was that keep calm and carry on. It's just like, we ain't going anywhere, buddy.
Yeah.
You can kill some of us, but you're not killing all of us. And then the payback's coming. And he was right.
They wanted to surrender. They wanted to negotiate with Hitler. And Winston Churchill was like, you don't negotiate with a fucking madman. You don't negotiate. Anything he says, we're going to be under his foot. With a Nazi flag flying above Westminster, that's not going to happen. But this is what I love about Winston Churchill. He starts his morning with a breakfast, eggs, bacon, a little juice, some water, a cigar, and a cup of scotch. Every morning he started his, and then at lunch he had a bottle of champagne. And then at dinner he had a bottle of champagne. and then he'd start having scotch through the night. And he slept. He took naps during the day. And I swear to God, Bill, I wish I had done my birthday right, because what I would have done is I would have had my wife bring me breakfast in bed with a cup of scotch and a cigar. And I would have had a cigar in bed with a scotch, eating eggs, reading the paper.
Dude, you call it Winston Churchill Day.
Winston,
and for one day, because none of us could ever measure up to him, but for one day, live like that great man.
A bottle of champagne at lunch, a bottle of champagne at dinner. I mean, it looked like, I was like, I need to have a cigar in my bed one day.
Dude, you know when I lived like that?
What?
You know when I went over, three times I went to Paris. One time I went with my wife on our honeymoon, and I lived like that for really? 2 weeks, and it was fucking amazing. I basically, I think it was our second trip there. God, we've been there three or four times. I think it was our second trip there. And we stayed in the Six Arrondissements, the right side of the river we were supposed to be on. I think it's the left bank. I don't remember, right? And we just had this killer fucking apartment. And there was this little bakery downstairs that made these little fucking donut balls that they injected with I don't know what. So I would go down and I'd get some eggs. And then I'd come in there, I would order that. I was doing it all in French. I had it down back then. Like, when I'm over there, I get it fast. So I was ordering all of that. And then right up the street was the cafe where Ernest Hemingway used to drink. Deux Maigots. It looks like two maggots is what it looks like it says in English. But I would just sit there. And every day we were like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to go over to the Louvre today, blah, blah, blah. And we would never make it. We had the best time. We were just, oh, look at that cafe. We got a drink here. And we would just sit there. Dude, we'd start getting stewed at about 10 in the fucking morning. And we had nowhere to go. My wife, you know, was smoking a cigarette or whatever. And I'd have these little shorties that I'd always pick a table to the outside. And I would just sit there and smoke. And I would order the beer over there. What was it, the beer I would get? Excuse-moi, monsieur, je voudrais de la bière, un 1664, s'il vous plaît, right? And get this beer, the 1665. And then he come back, le même chose, which just meant more of the same, right? And I just started hitting those things. And I was like, I got to figure out how to order scotch in French or whatever. And we would just get fucked up, and then we would take an afternoon nap, and then we would go out and get some ridiculously rich French meal. And we were just up at all hours of the night, and it was I can't even tell you, like, it was magical. It was magical. I just met
awesome.
Oh, dude, the first time we went, we were more like tourists, but the second time we lived there. So we would go down to the market. I knew what time to get up to get a baguette before it they were all gone for the day. And my wife would already be making the eggs. She learned how to kind of make them that French style, that sort of runny, cheesy egg style. Yeah, yeah. She did them like that. And then I would stop off that little bakery, which we were heartbroken because we came back 2 years later and that place had closed. You can never go home, Bert. It always changes a little bit, right? So, and we would just sit there and I would get a bottle of rosé and we would split that for breakfast, and we had a balcony, and then I would go out and smoke a cigar. And I wait before noon before I'd have a little heater or something like that. And we just, we laughed, hung out, we made love. we had the best time. And then the other time, you know, we went there. We went there three times. So the other time, our daughter was born. But after we were there, we then went down to Saint-Tropez. And that was just, and we were there off season because that place is a shit show.
Really?
I think during the summertime, we got there in like April. So there was like there's like one road in and you can sit in traffic for hours. And we got there and drank at this. There's a famous cafe there. It's all in red. Everything in it is red. They have all these pictures from like 40 years ago of, young Mick Jagger with like, you know, Cheryl Teagues or some supermodel from back then. And I remember the level of money that was there was just, we were just total rubes. They saw it on us, right? Just we were sitting in my stupid sweatpants. smoking a Cuban, right? And I was smoking a cigar in that cafe, and there was all these yachts backed up. Okay, it was like the cafe, and then there was a road, a little road, and then a little boardwalk, and then the dock where they were backed up. And the fucking guy's TV was so fucking big on the boat. I was in the cafe watching his the TV on his boat. And you know what was funny? I thought I was, what the fuck did I think I was watching? I can't remember. There was a great joke at the end, if I could remember. What I thought I was watching versus it actually was my eyes were just starting to go. You know what I mean? I thought I was watching. Question.
If you and your wife went back to Paris and she said, let's go back to Paris, just me and you, would you give yourself a week of boozing and cigars, or would you stay on the narrow?
I wouldn't leave my kids like that. I wouldn't do that. I'm taking them with me. That's the thing. It was not even the booze.
Yeah. Oh, you'd want to be the whole family there.
Yeah. But I got to tell you, dude, like.
Because that sounds romantic as fuck. It sounds.
Oh, dude. It was. It was
so awesome.
It was. Yeah. My wife's a really special. My wife has an amazing spirit, like incredible energy. And that just drew it out like. You know, I was with this beautiful woman that I just married, and I was in Paris. And if I wanted a Cuban cigar, I could get it. My phone wasn't working over there. I had nothing to do but just like chill out. And what's so funny is their food over there, like, is so much better than here in that, because it's not like poison. So I gained weight, but I mean, I would have put on like 20 pounds instead of like 7. You know, and dude, I was going fucking hard over there, boozing, and the booze alone should have done it for me. But like, yeah, that's kind of a wild thing. Like our food over here, like they go around to other countries and they try to force them to take it. And they go, no, we're not taking it. And they created a court. These fucking evil corporations created a court that's somehow above the court of your own country to force you to take the food. Do you understand? Like the fact that they're going after comedians and shit, it's just a misdirection. Like the level of evil that is, that it's like, we're not going to poison our own fucking people. And they're so greedy for fucking money that they create this thing. There was another thing. It's like, okay, you can sell it here, but you have to say what's in your food. And they're like, we're not doing that.
Jesus.
Dude, Dean Del Rey just told me he used to drink like five or six, like Diet Cokes every single day.
Yeah.
And when he decided like, oh man, I got to get off this shit. Like he was having these massive headaches and mood swings and shit. And according to him, he went out with this chick and she saw him drinking a Diet Coke and she somehow was affiliated. This is all alleged. Although this is the internet, so you can say whatever you want, right? He was saying, you know, I used to work there. My old boyfriend used to work there. They used to put that shit together wearing a hazmat suit. I mean, dude, it's nuts. And they'll come after you for saying shit like that. This is all alleged. But so that's what I did find was I don't know, I just went way off the rails. But Paris is nice. Saint-Tropez.
I want that trip. I want a Winston Churchill day. And I want a trip. My wife would never, like we went wine tasting one time, mm-hmm. and my wife just got wasted and then had heart palpitations all night. And I was like, and she was like, she couldn't pace herself. She got like crazy wasted and then like was like, I think I had too much sugar. I can't sleep. My heart is racing. And I was like, I'm still drinking. I'm by myself outside in a Adirondack smoking a cigar. I was like,
that's what that reminded me of when you was talking about the champagne. That's what I thought, because we took a tour of the Veuve Clicquot, you know, that top level. I'm not a champagne guy, but that's like the best there is.
Yeah.
And my wife wanted to go so bad, and I was just going like, all right, I'm like, this is a her thing, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna go because, you know, I can still get, you know, whatever, have a good time. And we went there and it was absolutely fascinating. I forget the story. It had something to do with them starting it and somebody died, and then the daughter just took over and was a total like beast of a business person. and just built this company, and it's still the same. Like, I don't know, these caverns, like, deep in the ground, and the whole time they're giving you samples, and you're getting a buzz going, and you're learning all this history. You know, the history from over there is so much older than here, because we killed all the history here, if you know what I mean. There was people, like, they go, oh, the history of the New World is so much more. It's like, yeah, because we slaughtered the people that were here. Every once in a while, we'll try to put up a new luxury condo, and we dig up some of it, you know? But over there, they still have it. So, yeah, that really makes me...
I could run a vineyard in the south of France. I would... I mean, I don't know. If you said my bills are paid and all I got to do is make some wine and that profit's mine for the year, I could really get into that. Clayton,
I would just be
in my backyard.
You're like, you know who seemed to be living the life? There was this killer, like 30 for 30 on Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
And he runs his own vineyard now. Dude, his wines are killing it. And he was just still like in killer shape. He still got the great head of hair. Still looks like he could just go out and throw 400 yards on a Sunday. And he was just sitting there, you know, doing the whole wine thing and shit. And I'm just like, oh, man. So my wife every once in a while tries to talk me into, like, you can't just have one. It's like.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. When you quit, was your wife like forever?
No, it was a personal thing.
Yeah.
I told you the story that I was drinking in my backyard with Bartnick, drinking this shit Kentucky Owl. It was delicious. And we had just watched the first half of Michigan, Ohio State. And we were smoking sticks and just hadn't had the game on pause. And I remember we were drinking, we had a little bit of that. And then we had just a bunch of Miller High Life on ice. It was just an awesome day. I remember looking at him going like, dude, I'm never quitting is what I said. And then the next day I woke up, I was like, I need to shut it down for a little bit. And it was the end of the year. And I was like, you know, I'm going to try to go a year. I wanted to go from January 1st to December 31st, no booze. And then I wanted to go a birthday, June 10th to June 10th. So I was like, all right, do another year and a half. And then it was just so easy to keep the weight off.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any of these massive, massive lapses in judgment where I just said things and did things and then had to apologize. And it was like, and then I had the whole thing is my kids have never seen me drunk is a good thing. And like, yeah, I mean, my daughter turns 21. She's like, come on, dad, have a drink with me. I'd be like, all right, you know, I'll have one then. So Club Soda Kenny's like that. He does it like that.
Really?
When his kids turned of age, he would have a drink, but he would have one and then just shut it down. My thing is I just couldn't shut it off. It's like a boxer after they get that first concussion, first knockout, then all of a sudden it's easier to knock them out. Like I pushed through something. I pushed through something evil, Bert, and there was no coming.
My thing was, you know, after we had that friend that got hurt, I had a moment of appreciation of like mobility, like just watching someone not be able to get from a car to a bed or get from one place to another. I remember that night getting out of my car and feeling like a little fat, right? Getting out going like, God damn it. Oh fuck. And I was like, hey, wait, I don't think it's supposed to be like that. And I said, I'm shutting it down. I'm going to shut it down for the month of December and I'm going to lose weight and I'm going to feel better. And I'm running 1,000 miles this year. I go, I'm going to finish this 1,000 miles and I'm going to like feel good about this 1,000 miles. And man, I'm telling you, I feel like I've lost.
You know, dude, if you just, you don't got to shut everything down. If you just do it in moderation, you're running 1,000 miles because you have to.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, when you have that thing, I always call like some of you, like, do you want that? I'd be like, that's a plate full of sit-ups. That right there is that's 2 hours on an elliptical. I fucking hate doing the elliptical. And then you're going on the elliptical and you're wearing out your knees and your hips. doing this for like an hour, all for like, you need your knees and hips for the rest of your life.
Joe said,
wearing it out.
Joe said to me one time, he goes, hey man, I'm worried about your knees running. And I remember thinking, oh, I guess just Joe didn't know anything about knees. Cause like, what are you talking about? I'm on a treadmill. I'm going straight. I'm not juking. That's how you hurt your knees. I didn't realize that my body was not meant to carry an extra 150 pounds on the top of it. And my knees were only meant for 100. Like, you only get the ligaments that are meant for the size of the body you got.
Yeah. Like, lean and mean, dude. Lean and mean. Dude, this guy's like, when they really get into working out and stuff, they become obese with muscle in a way where it's just like, as much as it's tone and all of that, and they look shredded and everything, if you have a little assistance getting into the next weight class, like that's when you start really, doing wear and tear. You know, the power your body has, the torque when you're turning with all of this muscle and stuff. I mean, obviously, I don't know.
Tiger Woods is back.
Yeah, and you can really, but it really fucks with your feet and your knees too. You can even go that way with like muscle. So like, I just did this run through Texas.
How was that?
It was wild, dude. It took a lot out of me because it was 2 shows a night, 8 days. So it was 16 shows, 16 plus hours of stand up. And we were outside and it was cold most of the nights. It was fucking cold. And I was joking on stage that if I had done my whole stand-up career outside, I would have been retired by now. We were all like, we were just outside for like 4 or 5 hours every night. Yeah. It was like we tailgated for 8 straight days.
Yeah.
And Kenny was going like, what's this red thing? Is this a bug bite? And I go, I think that's windburn, dude. You've been outside in the elements. Like, so you got to, you know, drink some water, put some lotion on it or something. But like the crowds were amazing, and the food was incredible. Dude, I got a place for you. The best brisket I've ever had in my life, hands fucking down. The Pecan Lodge. Pecan Lodge in Dallas, Texas. My God, dude. First of all, it wasn't that thin shave thing.
Yeah.
It was a thick cut, thick for brisket. Dude, I've never tasted anything like that. Like brisket, a lot of times, you know, everybody flips out about it. I'm not like the biggest brisket guy. I'm a pulled pork dude. So, yeah, I love pulled pork. So, that thing though, something the way it was, I can't even describe it to you. It was just melted in your mouth. It was unfucking believable. And what was funny was we tried to order it the second night in a row, and it wasn't there. So we ordered this other shit that didn't travel well, and I ate it. And I was like, ugh, right? So the next day I was meeting a buddy of mine. And I go, let's go to the Pecan Lodge. And they set it down in front of me again. And for 3 days in a row with barbecue in me, I almost puked. I was like, I can't fucking eat this shit anymore. I kind of ruined it.
Yeah.
Only because I overdosed. But now if like I would go back there in a second. That was the best barbecue. And then my favorite guitar shop in the world is in Houston, Texas.
What's the name of the guitar shop?
Southpaw Guitar. And all they have is lefties.
Oh.
They never have left, dude. And they have fucking everything. And it was so cool. I went in there with Dean. And I bought a couple of guitars off them. And I was so tempted, because you just can't get them like that anywhere, to get another one. And I'm just like, I have so many guitars that I don't have time to play right now. Like, I'm going to get another one. And then so I didn't get one. And now there's two of them that I'm thinking about going like, fuck, why didn't I get those? I'm like, I'm glad. Well, I should have got one of them, but I didn't. You know, I don't know. But.
Well, let's go watch the football game.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, I thought you literally froze up there.
No. I'm thinking about guitars. I have five guitars, and I have them all in cases, and I can never get to them, so I never play them. But I want to
have it out on a stand.
You want to have them out on the wall so you can grab them. That's when you feel inspired, is grab them and play a little bit.
Well, dude, that's what was the difference between me like playing drums and trying to get to another level. I soundproofed my garage and I got my drum. So I got guitars hanging in there. And I got an old Rickenbacker left-handed bass that's killer. I got some sick like nice stuff. Nothing too crazy. I didn't spend too much money because I didn't feel like I deserved him. And then also if I didn't end up having time to play him. But you know, I went in there looking for a telly and I just didn't see anything that stuck out. But then I saw a couple others that I was just like, my God, they're just amazing. I mean, yeah, I'm a total nerd for that stuff. But yeah, I agree with you. Let's go watch the football game.
Awesome.
Great to see you, dude. I'm glad you're having a nice, healthy month here. Let me and everybody else know in the next one. We want to know, you know, your CT scan or whatever the hell it was for your heart.
Oh, I will definitely tell you.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And awesome. I just had my heart checked out. I'm looking pretty good to go. And I got a physical coming up. So I'm doing all the right shit here. I've had too many friends have issues. So
that's all I kept saying was, I kept saying, I don't like that shit. I don't like going in for the CT scan. But then I was like, do it. And then you know you're not having a heart attack within the next 2 years, 3 years. Until you get your
If they find something, they can just go in and take care of it.
Yeah, take care of it.
Before it's like a problem.
Yeah.
What happened to us, Bert? We used to just talk about where we're doing spots and where we're drinking afterwards. Now we're talking about, you know, it's good to get your heart scanned.
It's staring right at me, Bill. It's right here.
Oh, hold it up again. I want to see it again.
Buffalo Trace.
What is that?
Oh, it's a fucking fine whiskey.
That's another thing I miss about like fucking whiskeys and bourbons. Just the bottles and the labels alone.
I was just thinking that.
They're works of art.
You could sell so much more water if you sold it in old whiskey bottles. I'd drink so much more water if I could put it down in a handle of Jack Daniels.
I know, dude. You know, they always like for the photo shoot of the bourbon whiskey, they always backlight it. And you just like, yeah. To this day, dude, if I could say anything, if I did anything, it would be bourbon. I really got into that shit. I, you know. All right, dude, you're making me thirsty.
Yeah,
here.
No, yeah.
Okay, buddy. Well, have awesome. One for me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been another wonderful episode of The Bill.
Bert.
Pod.
Cast.
All right, love you, brother. I'll see you in the next one.
All right, buddy.